Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host, I'm Jen Coffendaffer. I tell you what, I don't know if you know anyone like this, but my mom always used to tease, and I tease, that I have a gizzard or a cast iron stomach. I have just always been able to eat about anything, no matter how old it is, what it is. My family teases me because we will have leftovers in the fridge, and I'll look a week, two later, and I'm like, oh, this looks delicious, and I eat it. Nobody else really likes leftovers, so I get a lot of leftovers, but I guess it was 2 days ago because it hit me yesterday afternoon. I ate leftover chicken of my son's from some chicken place. I think it's called like Dave's Chicken. And I ate it. It was pretty good. It had big, thick chicken. And I thought, well, this is pretty good. Anyway, 24 hours later, it was not any good, at least inside me. Anyway, sorry to go through all that, but that is why I'm running late. I was doing pretty good. Everything was fine this morning until it wasn't. So anyway, I'm not sweating anymore. Threw on a little powder, and here I am because I'm really looking forward to doing this show. I think we have a great show ahead of us because did a very deep dive into Sheriff Nanos. And this isn't a Sheriff Nanos bashing dive, just so y'all know. This is going to be a factual dive on where is the head of the Nancy Guthrie investigation, where are things at, where are things going, what is he facing, what are the problems. I tell you, doing a deep dive into him was like doing a deep dive into the Guthrie case. I mean, it's not that complicated, but it was much more complicated than I had realized. And there's a lot of different things going on. We're going to touch on each of them. We're going to touch on how we even got here. And why is it important? It's only important for one reason. And that is the head of the Nancy Guthrie investigation is Sheriff Nanos. He's in charge, everyone. Yes, the FBI, and we're going to talk about this, the point at which things shifted over to the federal authorities and to FBI to some degree. But at the end of the day, if there isn't any proof that, assuming that they catch these perpetrators or perpetrator, porch guy and his buddies, if there's no proof that she crossed state lines or went to Mexico, or they came across state lines or came from Mexico, this will not be adjudicated federally, period, end of story. Sheriff Nanos knows that. Venue squarely lies with him. He recently said just a couple of days ago, and I keep meaning to pull that quote, pulled a lot today, but not that quote, where he's in charge, and he is in charge. He sort of turned over the ransom note side of things, not sort of, he did, to the FBI, but nevertheless, he's in charge of the overall investigation because it's going to be the DAs in Pima County that will be prosecuting this, unless, like I said, they can show that federal nexus. Right now, the reason the FBI has such a big footprint on this isn't only because they've opened what we call a police cooperation case. I believe we've also opened a kidnapping matter, likely based on sub B of the federal kidnapping statute that says if somebody is missing more than 24 hours, it can be presumed that they crossed state lines. And there's this nice little caveat that allows the federal authorities to also open a case. And I feel sure that this has gone beyond just a police cooperation case, although I'd love to see how the EC is is fashioned. In other words, if this case is titled as kidnapping matter or as a police cooperation matter. So we'll see. But nevertheless, here we are. He's in charge. That's how we need to look at it. And what does that mean for the investigation? What is going on? Well, we're going to talk about the background. We're going to talk about everything because we have to find out why is he at? I mean, Sheriff Nanos just must be saying, how was I, you know, dumb, fat, and happy, just as the expression goes. In other words, nothing going on, good to go. 1 minute, as the sheriff of Pima County, all-powerful sheriff, we've seen that with very little that can be done, although we're going to go into that. We're going to deep dive into that, too. How did he go from that stature into the community until now, what he is facing from multiple angles? We're going to talk about each of those angles. I want to bring you back to this press conference. And I truly believe that in part, this is where some of the issues were stirred up. Take a look.
Mayor, when we went to that scene the first night, Saturday night, it was just us. Since then, the FBI and others have asked, can we go and see it as well? And that's what you've been seeing. But it is a very important case to not just me and my team, but this entire community, all of our law enforcement partners. Suspects. I know there's been a lot out there about suspects, and I want to be very clear. At this time, we have not identified a suspect or a person of interest in this case. We are working our best to do that. But to be clear, we have nobody of interest or any suspects that you would consider a prime suspect. We're just not there. We're not there yet. The timeline, I think we've got it on the board, do we not? This is a timeline that we have been able to develop with some of the things that we've had processed. Various pieces of electronics that we've gathered. And you look at some of this, and I know you're going to say, well, why did it take you so long to get this to us, Sheriff? Well, because one thing, it's got to go out and be processed at different lab sites. And sometimes that stuff comes back to us, and like you, we have questions. And we say, wait a minute, what is this about? What about this? Could it be that? And so it's sent back, or it's sent somewhere else. So, and that's happening with all of the things we see, that process, that review, and that questioning of, all right, what is it we're looking at? So I'll go over it with you. You can see it on the board there, but at about 5:32 p.m., these are approximate times. 5:32 p.m., Nancy travels to her local family's home for dinner and playing games with the family, and just visiting. At 9:48 p.m., which is very consistent to what we were told by the family, that Nancy was dropped off at home, and we know that because we have a garage door open at approximately, I can't stress that enough, at approximately 9.
All right. I just wanted to share that because I think you can see a few things that left people a little troubled. One, you heard him say, and I've talked about this, that Saturday night he was notified. We've talked about this a lot. I think most people believe he just misspoke and it wasn't really Saturday. He says his officers showed up Saturday. He makes that very clear. It could be a misspeak. Maybe he really means that morning. I don't know. I don't know how you say you showed up Saturday, nobody else was there, it was only them that was there. How you get that confused with Sunday afternoon, at noon, afternoon. I don't really know or understand that. But if we're to go with that premise, you know, I guess we still have to believe his point that the FBI and nobody else was there with them. It was strictly Pima County. And then you also heard him say, listen, we didn't invite the FBI. They called us and offered assistance, which is often what happens with the Bureau. When a case, especially an abduction type case, a case that has prominence because Savannah Guthrie. When there's a situation like that, the FBI will give a call. Look, that's what we're supposed to do, is offer assistance. But there's been a lot of talk, you know, did he reach out? Did he invite? I mean, he makes it clear there. So either we believe him or we don't, but he says they reached out to him. So I wanted to clear that up, because as time goes by, a lot of things that have been said become very confusing. Now, I want to also play this. This is very, very recent. This was one of his interviews. I think it's right here. It's really short, so pay close attention. Ready? Oops, sorry. That's just his face. Sorry. Let me get... It's not that one I want to show. It's... I think it is this one. Here we go.
The call. Take me back to the night of Sunday, January 31st. When did you get the call that Nancy was missing?
Mike.
Did you guys catch that? And then he goes on to explain, doesn't correct, but she says Sunday night, January 31st. Of course, we all know that Sunday night is not the 31st, it's the 1st. So she could have just misspoken, but she says night. I'm bringing up these, and I'm only bringing up two. There's so many more of this confusion about even when they were initially contacted and called. I think most of it is misspeak, but this was not long ago. This interview took place at the very end of March, as I recall. Maybe the date is on there, but it's very recent. And you just wonder, why are we talking about the 31st, which is a Saturday at night? That's what she says there. When you first got the call, she says the wrong day of the week. And then, of course, again, and I'll play this really quick in case you didn't catch this. His original, I'm not going to play the whole thing, but I just want you to listen to the very first part of this presser, just the first few seconds.
To those at that time. But it really is about getting our partners out there.
Here we go.
Gladly answered those at that time. But it really is about getting our partners out there. To be fair, when we went to that scene the first night, Saturday night, it was just us. Since then, the FBI and others have asked, can we go and see it as well? And that's what you've been seeing. But it is a very important case to not just me. And
they ask if they could go and see it as well. And then again, you have the very recent interview with the local station where she asks about Saturday night. Well, she asks about, the night of the 31st when you were first called. And he doesn't correct that. He just goes on to answer it. Listen, it's so confusing. I'm just saying it's confusing. And this is a big part of the problem. A big part of the problem is the confusing messaging. Listen, he's a police officer of somewhere around 40 years. He isn't a communication specialist, although he ran for office and won. And you have to have some communication skills to do that, because you have to politic. You have to be out there and publicly speak. But this is something that will forever look bad on him, because A, the confusion about when Pima County was truly contacted, and B, the confusion, or not the confusion, the messaging that he did not call the FBI. And I could play you all these other clips where he says, yeah, we got the FBI involved early, blah, blah, blah. Well, this was what he said initially. And I believe this clip. I don't believe the cleanup effort after. And again, I want to be clear. This is not a let's bash Chris Nanos. This is a how did we get to where we're at? Where are we at with the head of the Nancy Guthrie investigation and the investigations into him? And what is the genesis? What is the factual basis for having an investigation against him? Well, again, this is the seed I think, that started at least with one of the investigations when we started seeing mishaps in the press from very early on. All right. A lot of people wonder, what is the big deal in terms of his issues with the Bureau? It doesn't even really exist. I'm going to take you back to an investigation that occurred by the FBI where they were called in, predicated. So I want to explain public corruption investigations. And I worked public corruption for years. Worked undercover in public corruption. That was very interesting. Befriending a local assistant, a district attorney in Houston. When we arrested her, in the Houston Chronicle, it read, "Pain for the prosecution." I thought was a great play on words. Her last name was Payne, not P-A-I-N, but P-A-Y-N-E. Anyway, that was the big headline in the newspaper when we ended up arresting her. But that's neither here nor there. I'm trying to not digress too much about, the Bureau. But I just wanted to talk about the public corruption aspect and how it works. So what happens is complaints come in. Information comes into the FBI and it says, listen, this individual is doing something illegally. Okay. And so that comes in. And when it comes in, and it can be what we call predicated. In other words, you can't just come in and give some information about a sheriff or a governor or something like that and expect the FBI to open a case. They're not going to. And particularly when it comes to public corruption type matters, they have to do their due diligence in looking at that information and seeing if anything else squares up against it. So typically, they will take the information and they start out with what we call a PI. And that's a preliminary investigation. So before they actually even open an event, a lot of people don't know this. We do PIs. Especially when it comes to public corruption, because public corruption, typically you're dealing with people with a lot of power. You're dealing with people who, marry and bury, case like that. I don't know if you even know about that case. He was the mayor of Washington, D.C. One of my partners in Houston did that entire case against him and actually got moved to Houston because of that case. Anyway, that's typically the type of people you're targeting are people, or not targeting, but can get information about, are people like Sheriff Nanos, who is arguably the most powerful single entity in Pima County in terms of law enforcement. Absolutely the most powerful, because he has every violation. Don't think the FBI is more powerful. I always kind of joke around that number one is your local law enforcement, because they have a whole slew of things you can be arrested for. Second, the IRS, they're very powerful. And then, yes, the FBI is very powerful, but very limited, and certainly limited when it comes to local jurisdiction, state jurisdiction, local authority. They have huge, expansive authority when it comes to federal law. Obviously, they have all the federal laws, and then we have letters of understanding with the different agencies where they then are vested with the same powers. But the Bureau federally has huge jurisdiction, but not on these local matters. So anyway, we open up what we call a PI often. And that is where we just say, okay, let's see if there's any truth to this. And we have some authority on with a PI. So you'll look at records, look at documentation. You can do some investigation. And so what they determined was that Sheriff Nanos was put under scrutiny for misappropriation of funds. And due to that investigation, the FBI descended on his department. They were looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars that it was alleged was misappropriated, and it was misappropriated. However, Sheriff Nanos did not take the fall for it. Another individual took the fall, if you will. That was the individual that the Bureau ended up charging. And so Sheriff Nanos did not get charged in that case. I want to make that very clear. And it was a multi-year probe by the FBI. There was funds misappropriated. In other words, oh my gosh, there is so much funding that a sheriff has unilateral power over. Huge amount of funds to fund his department, to fund things that are kind of general, right? Community service, right? Community outreach. I always love these categories because you can imagine how funds can be misappropriated. What I saw a lot in the Virgin Islands, and again, that whole department was corrupt. I mean, it just was. They were named in a RICO as the RICO entity. The racketeering entity was the police department. The Bureau did not work with the local VI department because they were the ones doing the importation of drugs and running the drug scene there. And so, and other terrible crimes. I've just got to digress one more time to give you an example. So when I first got there, one of the things that happened to somebody, just so you understand how corrupt this department was, and the whole department, like I said, they were named in a RICO. This was a small case, but it just tells you about the corruption. A woman is at Food Center, which was one of the only about three places you can buy food there. And she's there and she backs out and she's hit by somebody. So, you know, when you're in your spot, you come out, you get hit right here. I'm giving you an example of public corruption. She's hit and she exchanges information with the person thinking, all right, their insurance is going to pay. No problem. She goes off. The next thing she knows, she gets a telephone call from two Virgin Island police officers who say, you need to bring $500. You need to meet us at this particular strip mall and you need to pay us the $500 or else you're going to jail for hitting that car. She's like, whoa. I didn't hit anything, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, well, that's not how we understand it. That's not how we wrote it up. $500, meet us. And she did. She meant and paid. That was one of the cases, right? That's a really good case to open. So another one involved, and I won't give too many, but I'll give you one other just to show you what systemic public corruption looks like within a system beyond all the drug trafficking and the huge stuff, how systemically this can work. Another one was there was a black and white store there. If, for those of you who shop and are familiar, it's kind of a mid to upscale store and they really only sell black and white clothes. And a lady had gone in and bought something, left. She didn't like it. It didn't fit. She goes back in and returns it to the clerk. And then she is extorted by police because the clerk is in cahoots with the police department, right? And she says that she stole this because she could say whatever she wants. So she says that this woman stole this, which she didn't. And she said, no, I returned it. I never stole anything. I paid for it initially. Anyway, she got the same thing extorted for $500. Pay us, meet us behind Haven Site, and you got to pay. That is deep, centered police corruption where everyone is on the take. It's horrible. But nevertheless, I'm just trying to explain what kind of police corruption cases there are. And in this case, it was misappropriating funds. So another case, and I won't go into a lot of detail, but basically a Virgin Island public official misappropriated funds to pay for a gate at his home and security system and everything. And we tracked that. So that's the sort of misappropriation of funds. So anyway, hundreds of thousands of fund misappropriated from what it is meant for. It's appropriated for particular things that have to do with the department, the sheriff's department, and it said it went somebody else. The FBI was able to trace it. And then it comes down to, yeah, who authorized it, who ordered it, who benefited. I want to give you a take back of Sheriff Nanos's interview in 2016, what he had to say about the investigation, because I think it gives you a flavor for what people have been saying, and that is that there's animosity. Okay, here we go.
Things all resolved and the case is all over. I challenge him. I challenge Mr. Black to stand up to that camera by himself and say, we have looked at this investigation and we have exonerated, completely find this investigation to be total BS, because that's what it is.
I want to go back to the beginning because you don't hear what he says about the FBI. Here we go. This is 2016. He's talking about ASAC Black, who was the Tucson SAC during, or ASAC during this investigation. Let's see if I can get this to play.
Am I upset at the FBI? Absolutely. They should be. They get by with saying no comment. Who does that in today's world? Who does that? Yet they get by with that. And when this thing's all resolved and the case is all over, I challenge them. I challenge Mr. Black to stand up to that camera by himself and say, we have looked at this investigation and we have exonerated, completely find this investigation to be total BS, because that's what it is.
And we all know now it wasn't total BS. It was a founded investigation. It was predicated misappropriation. Again, somebody at the department took the fall for that. And, you know, there you have it. But to say that he likes the FBI, gets wrong with the FBI, you heard it from his own mouth. And, you know, I'm just trying to play facts, facts that every time I go back and I look at things that have been said, I just want to lay the foundation for everyone so they understand sort of where Sheriff Nanos came from. He didn't invite the FBI onto this investigation, like you've heard him say later. I just played the clip where he said, no, I didn't reach out for them, but they reached out for me. And so I want the palette to be clear as to the facts on this case concerning the relationship, because it's important, because we need to understand where things stand with the person leading the Nancy Guthrie investigation, period. So let's now go into, and this is really important here. Let's go into, and I have another picture of him. Oh, yeah. Well, let's go into this. Let's go into what is he looking at? And I also want to go into what he's done right in the investigation and what have been issues. Some of the things he did right, and then it became an issue. All right. Let's talk about this. What is going on exactly? So one of the things going on behind the scenes that has actually come to the forefront in terms of Nanos and who's after him and what's going on, we have to start with Heather Lappin. For those of you who don't know who Heather Lappin is, she has a $2 million lawsuit against Sheriff Nanos. She was who he ran against. Now, this is what's interesting. She is from his own department and had a supervisory role in his own department, well thought of from all accounts. Well, as soon as she said she was going to run, and literally in October of 2024, he removed her from her duties, opened 5 internal investigations on her, a gag order was issued. He did put her on paid leave, so at least she got payment. But basically, right before the investigation, 5 investigations on her got her out. Now, what did an independent investigation show? I'm going to put up the letter because this just came out. This was just done. And this is so small, there's no chance I can read that. with my, even with my glasses on, but I've got it right here. So this is what this says here. This is the Pima County Human Resources final decision from the investigation. It's called an administrative investigation, 25X-251. The date this was released was March 19th, 2026. So they just finished this investigation that was started in 2024 when Ms. Lappin said she was retaliated against, that basically she wanted to run for office against him, against really her boss, right? It's her boss. She worked for the department. She was a high-ranking lieutenant in that department. And again, right before the election, she was put on leave. By the way, she lost by less than 500 votes. 500 is just such a small amount. But I'm going to read this letter in case you can't. There's some eagle eyes out there. My eagle eyes are gone. My cast iron stomach, I think, remains, but now I'm not so sure. So the department is the Pima County Sheriff's Office. The complaint is Lieutenant Heather Lappin, the principal person she complained against, Chris Nano, sheriff. North Star Employment and Legal Solutions. So they hired a third-party contractor, independent of anybody, to come in. North Star Employment and Legal Solutions conducted an admin investigation into Lieutenant Lappin's complaint against Sheriff Chris Nanos, alleging workplace bullying and retaliation following her decision to run for Pima County Sheriff. The findings of the report are listed below. Okay, so here's the report and findings. Number one, bullying. A preponderance of the evidence does not support a finding of bullying that the responding party acted for the purpose of creating a hostile or abuse workplace. Okay, so Sheriff Nanos was found not to have bullied. Two, ethics. The preponderance of the evidence supports a finding that Sheriff Nanos used his authority and department resources for political gain. The evidence includes considering Lieutenant Lappin's political campaign in investigation and disciplinary decisions making and culminating in issuing a press release that included information obtained in his capacity as sheriff. So just to be clear, bullying, nope, they didn't find bullying. Ethics, yes, it supports a finding that he used his authority and department resources for political gain. Okay, code of conduct, number three. The preponderance of the evidence supports a finding that Sheriff Nanos violated applicable code of conduct rules by including confidential information in a press release about the reasons he placed Lieutenant Lappin on paid admin leave for political gain. He did not maintain rules of courtesy or civility. So basically what happened in this deal is obviously he needed to have a smear campaign. He was worried about losing to her. Okay. So what he does is not only does he put her on leave, opens five investigations against her, all by the way, after, and she was with the department, I think 18 plus years after she decides to run against him. Right. So that's what this was all about. This is part of her claim and what they looked in. Okay, so you might be wondering, well, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? This is what they said. And this, again, is the company was the North Star Employment and Legal Solutions, and this was asked, you know, they were paid to do this investigation by Pima County. This is what was determined in their report. The sheriff's actions were found to be inconsistent with the listed policies. However, the sheriff is not subject to these policies as an elected official. And Melody, by the way, thank you for becoming a member. Deborah, thank you so much for becoming a member. I truly appreciate it. We're going to talk about some member things after we finish this live, but I want to stay laser focused on issues for Nanos right now. So this finding essentially says, listen, if you're elected, you do not have to, you cannot be disciplined even if you do something wrong. So in this light, in these parameters. So I find it so interesting that here you are in charge. And this reminded me a lot of that DA case I talked about, the Houston case I told you about that I worked undercover in. I find it very interesting that you are the sheriff responsible not only for setting a good example, but also implementing, in other words, disciplining others who violate rules, regulations that we just read and are listed here. But wow, can you imagine knowing you yourself aren't held to the same standard? You're not held to the standard at all. Because you're elected, you're in a different category where the rules don't apply to you. The rules did not apply to him. So basically, they paid all this money. To me, I just would have never paid the money. I can't believe Pima County paid the money for, and I guarantee this is tens of thousands of dollars to investigate something like this. And then you get your findings and you find somebody culpable. And then you say, oh, yeah, but anyway, he's elected official. So it's no issue. That is an issue doing that. That needs to change. It should be elected officials have to follow the same standards, same rules that everybody else in the department has to follow. I just don't know how you can have one set of rules for the leader and a separate set of rules for the minions, for the people who serve the leader. Doesn't make any logical sense, nor does it to spend likely tens of thousands of dollars on an investigation when you know that no matter what you find, nothing is going to change. At least it's in black and white for Lieutenant Lappin. Again, we're looking at right now what heat, what investigations, what issues Sheriff Nanos is facing. Why do we even care? The only reason we care, in my opinion, so he's not being accused of child exploitation or, some other horrible criminal act, nothing like that, which typically when I follow public corruption cases, particularly against law enforcement, I feature them all the time on my Twitter. Every month I have at least one and sometimes up to four. There's nothing worse than a bad cop. I just did one a couple of days ago on a police officer that may or may not be guilty of this, but may have killed his partner and his romantic on and off partner during a raid. He's been exonerated criminally, but they're going after him civilly. We'll see how that ferrets out. But anyway, I just want everybody to know I'm not the type that just looks the other way. Everybody knows I'm very blue oriented because I am. I back the blue. There's no tougher job, in my opinion, in the country, in any occupation than being a police officer. You have to make last minute decisions that can cost your life, your fellow officer's life, and other people's lives. And you work ridiculous hours. Most people are just committed to trying to do the right thing. They have a sense inside deep of wanting to give back to their community. That's just who they are, wanting to serve and protect. That's really true. That's the vast majority. And then there's some bad apples. But nobody is looking, I want to be crystal clear, nobody is looking at Sheriff Nanos for some egregious criminal act. So normally, I wouldn't even be looking at this. The only reason it has relevance is because he's running the dang investigation. And when you have no confidence, and that's another thing we're going to talk about, he had a zero confidence report. No confidence from his troops. Now, over 60 of those troops abstained from voting because they didn't want to. I mean, to me, if I'm in charge and I have 60 abstained from voting, that's just like voting no confidence. I mean, you need to, if you support Sheriff Nanos and you believe he's being railroaded and you believe that, you know, what's happening is wrong, you put your hand up and you support your man. But so I consider abstaining from a vote, and I understand why it's done, because they don't want to be retaliated against, blah, 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 if he stays in power. I get it. But to me, if I'm the sheriff and I see these 60 people that just didn't vote, I'd be like, yeah, but did you support me? Anyway, the next thing, so we've got Leather Lappin's $2 million suit related to the retaliation in her when she ran in 2024, and she has this bit of independent proof, and then her lawsuit is extensive. So he's got on that front that person going at him. Second, let's talk about, let's see which one. Let's go next to the recall campaign. No. I want to do that one last. Let's go to Matt Hines's. Matt Hines is behind the issue concerning Sheriff Nanos misstating, if you will, I'm going to put him back up here, misstating, if you will, what happened during his time frame at the El Paso Police Department. Okay, so we have multiple areas where people are after him for. One, again, I just talked about, that's what he did when this lieutenant decided to run against him, so that he's dealing with that. Number two, and this comes from Matt Hines, and this is about him misstating his employment information on his resume regarding his performance in El Paso. Now, I want to be clear. This El Paso stuff comes clear back 1970 through 1980. Oh my gosh. I don't know about y'all, but I think in 1970, I was like in kindergarten or something. It's a long time ago. But they're looking back to that. And they're looking back to that because he was untruthful, apparently, to Pima County regarding all of this. Okay? So let's look at what happened at El Paso. And again, he was there, looks like 70 to 80. I think it's actually 82. But one of the things is he says he left in 82. He really left, or 84. He said 84. They said really it was 82. He had said he was never suspended. However, when they got the documents from El Paso, it showed he had been suspended 8 times. Ooh. Can't even imagine that. 8 times. What did he do those 8 times? Well, I have only 4 of them. So I'm assuming there's 4 different violations and maybe multiple times related to these, because I couldn't find any others. Gambling, excessive use of force, insubordination, and this is crazy, but the one that broke the camel's back was actually regarding, of all things, vehicle towing. Now, I've really thought about this, and I can't find publicly what exactly happened with the whole vehicle towing thing. I thought, what could be so egregious that he didn't want to tow somebody? You know, we just don't know, but it was something to do with towing. It's so ridiculous. It's such a small, petty thing. But apparently he was supposed to have somebody towed. He refused to do it. I don't know whether it was his sister or his mom. I don't know why he would refuse to tow somebody when he was supposed to. I don't know. And we're not going to know. It seems like that's on lockdown. It also seems like that's way more involved than just towing. But that, again, is an insubordination situation. When you are told to do something and you don't do it in law enforcement, and really any workplace, but it's particularly egregious in law enforcement, unless you're told to do something illegal. If I am told, Jennifer, go cover that door, even though I think, well, we shouldn't cover that door, we should cover this door. You don't, that's no, it's yes, sir. And I go cover the door if I'm not in charge. If I am in charge and I order somebody to do something, they do it. And that's, so if for whatever reason he was ordered or under obligation to do this towing and didn't, and he doesn't, that's another insubordination issue. But nevertheless, it seems so petty to me. But that was the one that pushed everything over the edge where he ends up resigning. You know, I could kind of believe, because all these years have gone by, and I know for me, I can never remember after 28 years in law enforcement plus these last 8 years working with law enforcement and lawyers. Gosh, the years get all jumbled for me. I have to have something major like a child being born to tweak me, or something specific like getting a specific award. There was an award I got that was such a big deal for me personally when I went to Langley in the CIA and got that award that, you know, that was a big time in my life. So when I look back at different things, it's hard for me to remember specific dates, seriously, other than when my EOD, what we call it, our entry on duty into the Bureau. Everybody knows that. I can remember exactly when I retired too. But anyway, he misses it by 2 years. He says he left in 84 when he really left in 82. People are making a big deal out of that. I believe that that could be just a mistake. But where the big mistake gets messed up is when he says he was never suspended. Just tell the truth. But he didn't want to tell the truth, right? Because if he tells the truth about getting suspended for insubordination, for gambling, for excessive force, what are the chances that he ever gets on with Pima County? Zero? He knows that. So he, it seems, didn't tell the truth. So that leads me to, we've got two more areas, the Board of Supervisors. So the Board of Supervisors said, the Board of Supervisors for Pima County, because all this is going on related to these issues, in other words, related to Heather Lappin's issue and related to him not being honest when he first got on board, they say, listen, you've got to answer to this. And you have to answer by April 21st, which he did. He did a 22-page signed sworn statement. What were the four areas? One, I just touched on the 1982 resignation from El Paso. He had to explain why he actually left. Number two, he had to explain his employment history regarding these issues I just talked about, the gambling, the excessive force, the insubordination, this towing situation, whatever that's about. He also, and I found this very interesting, he has to explain his budget, right? They want to know about any money. That's the first I had heard about this. So now they're not only looking at his past, but they're also questioning about his budgeting of money. Doesn't it sound like to you that they might be still concerned about misappropriation? I wonder if they thought, he thought, I'm off the hook. The FBI came in, somebody else, they pinned all that money on for misappropriating. Maybe I'm free and clear. Anyway, they're looking into that. The other thing that I found really interesting, they're looking at his cooperation with ICE on immigration. His last name is Nanos. He's obviously Hispanic. I'm like, what are they finding here? Why are they worried about his cooperation with ICE? Well, I'll tell you what, because ICE, somebody with immigration, has said there's a problem. There's a problem. I don't know who he's covering for. I don't know whether it's relatives. I don't know whether it's friends. It could be a philosophy, right? Some people just philosophically don't believe that people should be, you know, out. Okay. So there's that. There's that, right? All right. So they're looking into that. I mean, not only looking into it, he has had to, in his 22-page report, address his budget, address his cooperation or lack thereof with ICE officials, his employment history from 1970 to 1980, the specifics regarding his 1982 resignation, and then finally, the last thing he had to put in this 22-page deposition-type report, in other words, he had to swear to it, was circumstances regarding alleged retaliation against other deputies. And I'm sure that's going to include Heather Lappin and all the others that we've heard about during this case, right? The retaliation. So that's a lot. I'm surprised he was actually able to answer all those questions in only 22 pages. But maybe he's just less verbose when it comes to writing. So that's big. So on May 12th, 2026, mark your calendars. That's when the Board of Supervisors is going to review what he submitted. See how it aligns. Is Nanos Greek? Okay, I thought it was Spanish. Apologies. Nevertheless, and I should have looked into his background. I will do that. I will look into his background. In other words, this whole ICE thing, is that, like I said, a philosophical that he's not going to cooperate? I mean, that's, it looks like to me that's what's being alleged. Or is it because of, you know, information concerning people he's related to? I don't know. I don't know if his wife's Hispanic. I don't know if he has any Spanish heritage. I thought he did from his last name. I thought Nanos was a Spanish surname. This person says, no, it's Greek. I don't know. I need to look closer at that. Nevertheless, the Board of Supervisors, May 12, 2026, they're going to review the submission. It was sworn, and they're going to make a decision on Sheriff Nanos. And you know what they are allowed to do? They are allowed to remove him. This is the only people, I think, that can actually remove him. Okay, finally, and I've still got a lot on this. I might have to save this for tomorrow and talk about the recall campaign and everything that has to do with the investigation. I think I'm going to save that. Tomorrow will be part two. We're going to talk about the recall campaign that was started by his opponent. That's important, Daniel Gutierrez, about the signatures, what's required. I'm going to give you all the dates. And then I'm going to go into the specificity of the issues, as to why there's even a recall campaign. We've gone over a lot today. I just think it's very important to understand, because the head of this investigation that we're putting our money on for this to be solved, for Nancy Guthrie to be found, it lies with Sheriff Nanos. He's the head. So anyway, that's part one. We'll do part two tomorrow on Saturday. So hopefully if you missed this one live, you'll be able to watch it so that you'll be all up to speed when we do part two tomorrow. Everyone, thank you so much for being here. Again, sorry it was late. I tell you, I feel so much better. I'm still a little, if I'm like sweating, you know how you get a little sweaty when your stomach and you're kind of a hot mess. But I thank you all for being here. And this is an important case. We're going to stay on it. For members, we're going to have 60 days, or if the case is solved, whichever one comes first, and I still have faith, we have a giveaway. We're going to draw a name from the members that are $3.99 members and above. And we're going to do a cool giveaway of some FBI memorabilia of mine, just as a way to give back to you, because I really appreciate you as members. And then we have pins coming out. They're going to be Nancy Guthrie pins, meaning I think we're going to do them. I have the yellow ones. It's very difficult to read. So I think we're going to do black ones with yellow to commemorate Nancy Guthrie. They're going to be $10 and $12 for non-members. And, you know, we're going to package them up and mail them out to you for those interested. And hopefully we'll have some more merch for Break the Case. I appreciate each and every one of you. Until next time, may justice be served for Nancy Guthrie and for all the missing people.